Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
And we're into extra time.
Kia ora and welcome to Extra Time. I'm Clay Wilson. Athletes and social media. It's a combination giving sports fans increasingly more access to and information about the world's best sports people. It's also a combination that comes with pitfalls, as England cricketer Ollie Robinson has very acutely discovered. Robinson has been suspended from the England team and an investigation is underway after the revelation of racist and sexist tweets he made 8 years ago. Adding to the embarrassment, the revelations coincided with the biggest moment of his career, day one of his test debut at Lord's against New Zealand.
On the biggest day of my career so far, I'm embarrassed by the racist and sexist tweets that I posted over 8 years ago, which have today become public. I want to make it clear that I'm not racist and I'm not sexist. I deeply regret my actions and I'm ashamed of making such remarks. I was thoughtless and irresponsible, and regardless of my state of mind at the time, my actions were inexcusable. Since that period, I have matured as a person and fully regret the tweets. Today should be about my efforts on the field and the pride of making my test debut for England, but my thoughtless behaviour in the past has tarnished this. Over the past few years, I've worked hard to turn my life around. I would like to unreservedly apologise to anyone I've offended, my teammates and the game as a whole in what has been a day of action and awareness in combating discrimination from our sport. I will continue to educate myself, look for advice and work with the support network that is available to me to learn more about getting better in this area. I'm sorry and I've certainly learned my lesson today.
So, should athletes be held accountable for something they did so long ago? Is punishing them right or wrong? And what are the lessons for aspiring sports people when it comes to social media? Joining me now to discuss further are Stuff Sports Zoe George and RNZ sports columnist Hamish Bidwell. Well, Zoe, I'll come to you first. This Ollie Robinson saga has really captured the attention of so many people. A lot has been said and written over the past week. What have you made of the way this story has developed in the sort of 7 or 8 days since it came out?
Yeah, I'm really glad that actually the ECB are taking proactive steps around this and have stood him down. The tweets are, to be quite honest, quite vile. In some of them, he describes performing a sex act on an unconscious woman. You know, that's tantamount to rape. There are tweets that target those with disabilities, the Muslim community, you know, there's homophobic tweets as well. And I'm sorry, but the whole I'm young and dumb excuse doesn't wash with me. It doesn't matter if you're 19, 39 or 99, you do not say those things or do those things. So I'm really glad that the ECB are doing what they're doing. And he has apologised, which is a really great first step. And I would like him to go a step further and donate his match fee from his very first test to the UK Paralympics team, to Women's Refuge and to the mosque, and then become an advocate for these groups and understand the damage that he's actually caused. I don't think he should have ongoing repercussions. I don't think he should lose his career over this, but it's absolutely a learning opportunity, not only for him and for the ECB, but also for the wider cricket community and sports community who have allowed rhetoric like this to happen and occur and continue to occur.
So, Hamish, Zoe touched on there the young and dumb theory that these things happened 8 years ago when he was an 18-year-old man. Where do you stand in terms of accountability for someone that old and saying those things and where he is now?
It's interesting. I wasn't across what he tweeted until we started, just before we started taping, and Zoe explained the magnitude of the stuff. I mean, one of the situations here was timing. So the ECB, the England Cricket Board, made a big show of pretending they were inclusive and diverse and all that before play the first eight Lords started. And then these tweets surface, and there's a belief that there's been a bit of muckraking, that someone in Australia has sat on these tweets and then expose them to destabilise England team, that's a red herring. And just as there's a thing about talent often excusing behaviour. You know, he's a good bloke, he's learned from his lessons, you know, look how well he played, let's give him a second chance. That's all cobblers. Vile is vile, and what he says is utterly offensive.
So what's the appropriate punishment? Zoe said there, like, you know, he's been obviously been suspended and most people don't want to see sort of it to perhaps ruin his career, but what is the appropriate level of penalty for someone like this?
No, why shouldn't it? You know, Zoe talked about giving, you know, donating his match fee. The punishment is not to play. You're not fit to represent the country, to wear the jersey, to don the cap. You know, you've had a chance to be a decent citizen. You've declined that chance. Therefore, you don't get to play. That's the ultimate deterrent.
When we talk about, you know, punishment and deterrence, though, we still have sports bodies who are picking men who have conducted violent acts against women, physical violent acts against women, who are still representing and playing in many of our sports teams. So, you know, we need to not allow them to play too. So if he doesn't get to play because he tweeted something awful and horrible, great, okay, that's fine. But we need to have consistency across the board.
The ECB say they're investigating. What do we expect that investigation to include? And if they do find that he's not that person, I mean, is that something that should perhaps be in his favour? Because Yester doesn't condone what he said back then at all. It's, I think most people, any decent person would agree that there's it's not okay. Mm. But do you give him some credit to be a changed person in any way?
Well, he's also been stood down from numerous county teams over the years as well for inappropriate behaviour. So this is not a new pattern of behaviour him. But I think that, yes, this is a really great opportunity for growth, for learning, for a bit of restorative justice. You know, it really is. I know it's a really tough conversation that we're having, but we need to talk about our broader culture and what we think is okay and acceptable. And so I would like to see him play. I mean, he did play very, very well the other day, but, you know, that was overshadowed by these awful, vile, disgusting tweets, and actually rightly so.
One of the things that struck me, Hamish, is just the sheer attention the story's received. And regardless of whether the punishment's appropriate or not or anything of that nature, there's been a lot of attention given to someone who said these horrible things and the fact that they're not okay. Is that at the very least a good thing to come out of this, that it's getting a lot of attention?
It's a hard one. I'll admit that I'm jaundiced on some of the stuff. Having dealt with athletes professionally and seen them at close quarters, I know that they're not the people that they're portrayed as. I know they're not the people they'd like to pretend they are. And so there's a part of me that really wants athletes to get what's coming to them. There's some really grubby behaviour out there. We're treated in the media like dirt a lot of the time. I bring that on myself because I'm a bit combative, not sort of personally. I don't, in an interview situation, I don't have a go at people, but I'm quite forthright in print. You have to be heard, because there's so much media out there, social or otherwise, that to be noticed, you have to sort of differentiate yourself. So I want people to know athletes as they are. I want athletes to be exposed. I don't believe that education, give me a break. I'm not the greatest person in the world, but I know how to treat people well. Is that a big, am I amazing for that? Do you know what I mean? I care for people. I want them to be happy. I think we deserve an equal chance. So these aren't crazy ideas. This is just human nature. And yet we excuse athletes. We say, oh, he's young, he needs to learn. They should know these things. It's just the basic of being a human being.
I had an instance recently where I wrote about my experience of sexual harassment and gender violence in sport.
Can I just come in? That was horrific. I nearly died when I read that. You were really brave to do that.
Oh, thank you so much. It's such an important subject, and I actually got some amazing feedback from a whole range of people. But one of the messages that I got was quite frankly quite vile and quite threatening, and calling me stupid, and that what's this got to do with sport? And why don't I just go and report a match report, because this isn't real sports journalism. Anyway, normally I don't give time and energy or emotional labour to these types of people, but I thought I'd give him 5 minutes. So I Googled him and I found him. Anyway, turns out he was a Year 13 student at a boys' school from the South Island. And I ended up calling the principal and being like, hello, and having a yarn to them about the impact of those words. It turns out he is a very talented young cricketer. Anyway, course, the principal made him ring me and apologise for his language and behaviour. And I just kind of said to him, so why did you think that it was okay to say something like that to me? And do you have a mum? Do you have a sister? Do you have aunties? Do you have grandmas? You know, and do you think it's okay to say that type of stuff to them and about them? And then I asked him what he's learned from this opportunity. And we had a really fantastic conversation, and he was apologetic. But I really hope that having that conversation with me has helped change his life. And I didn't want to embarrass him or anything like that. But I get misogynistic, awful messages all the time, and I have to deal with them. And so I want to say to those who are posting these messages, please, please, think about it before you push send. Doesn't matter if it's on email, doesn't matter if it's on Twitter, whatever, because it does have an impact. It really does.
Have we always been this angry as a society? Have we always hated people this much? Have we always wanted to tell them how much we dislike them? I don't recall this growing up, but it seems to be a function of normal society now that if you're outraged, you're entitled to tell people anonymously or otherwise. It's ghastly. And I just think more broadly, we need to just try and be kinder to each other. Like, how hard is that? I'm not asking for a miracle. Just treat people with a bit of kindness, a bit of decency. Like you say, you've got a sister, you've got a mother. Think, how would they feel? Mm. So why are you laying this down on me?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think as well, though, one of the things that I've been thinking about Ollie and him being stood down by the ECB, I really hope that they are wrapping around support for him as well, because he's going to be getting it now too, not just on social media. And the research out from here in New Zealand actually found, you know, that because of about 50% of athletes, elite athletes, are struggling with fatigue, and social media is really contributing to that fatigue and to their anxiety. Something like 80% of female athletes say that social media is the number one pressure to conform to traditional feminine body ideals, and that about 75% feel that it has a detrimental impact on their health and well-being, including eating disorders and menstruation problems. 54% say that they have more pressure to perform from social media than they do from their coaches. So it's also athletes who are facing really tough times on social media, not just athletes saying and doing really dumb stuff, but it's also the flip side as well. So I think you're right, Hamish. We need to be kinder to each other, and we need to be considerate and really think about what we're posting, why we're posting it, and what kind of response we're going to get.
So what's the
we talked about this a little bit on last week's show in relation to Naomi Osaka and the fact that sometimes you say things as an athlete that put you under the spotlight, that create scrutiny upon you that you don't wish for and you don't like. And then it's, oh, well, so-and-so's, you know, it's doing it hard or doing it tough, you know, let's lay off. I want to be kind to people, but when these athletes are offensive or they make fools of themselves, they're entitled to be criticised, and they immediately, when they are, play the mental health card, and we all have to stand back at 10 paces and say, oh, I didn't mean it, I'm very sorry for you. But they need to think before they act. Mm. And if behaviours are going to change, then there has to be some scrutiny. We have to be able to criticise people and punish people who do the wrong thing.
So, I mean, obviously the key message out of all of this is that it's simply not okay to say and put out these kind of things. I mean, that's a very important lesson for everyone from this, is that these things are simply not okay. But in terms of athletes and social media, what's the lesson for them in terms of how they're using it, how they will use it as aspiring athletes? Should they simply put it away until they're, you know, quote unquote, old enough and mature enough to have views on the world? What should athletes take out of this in terms of social media and how they're using it or how they will use it?
I didn't get on social media. I got on social media because on a previous employer wanted me to, and they made it very clear that I needed to. But I did that as an adult. Do you know what I mean? I was, I don't know, nearly 40 perhaps. Do you know what I mean? And so that gives you a perspective. Did I tweet some daft things when I started? Sure, but I wasn't like, you know, going into bat on all sorts of social issues or anything like that. I would give updates on hamstring injuries and team selections and who's training today and that kind of stuff, because yes, it's a valuable tool. Yes, people like the information, but I kept it, as far as I could anyway, utterly professional. This is my work life. This is an account that expresses some information about what I do for a job, but you won't get anything about me because I'm not here. This is my work thing.
Are athletes being told that? I guess that's the thing, you know, like, are athletes being, when they're coming into this profession or into this world, are they being told to maybe keep it to those sort of things, and then you avoid anything like this altogether?
Well, their
agents and their management staff and the team minders are negligent if they're not being told that, because these people are actually making a living off giving media advice, and if they're not giving it appropriately, then they're not very good, are they?
The thing is, though, social media can be a really good platform, and, you know, it's, if we talk about the broader structure of sport as well, women are reliant, sportswomen are actually reliant on sponsorship, advertising, that type of thing, from social media, because they don't get paid the same in sport. And so I think we should start looking at those things too, so that they can start paying them properly, so they don't have to be 100% reliant or 50% reliant.
It's using it in the right way.
Where they're being celebrated, that, you know, but we shouldn't have to force athletes to use social media if they don't want to. I personally try not to engage too much with social media. I like to follow people and see what they're up to, particularly our Olympians as we're heading into the Olympics. I know that Facebook held a session for Olympic athletes recently to talk about safety, new safety protocols and that type of thing to keep them safe. So that's really great.
Yeah, so to go back to the start of this discussion and Ollie Robinson, before he's picked, the powers that be, the ECB, need to go through things like his social media platforms and see what sort of a person he is and what he's done in the past, because these things will follow you. You won't erase them. They will come back. So before someone's selected in this day and age, you know, it's not about runs and wickets. It's about the overall person. And so the people who are picking people need to make sure that this person is going to reflect the image that they want reflected, because you won't have this stuff. So they should have done their due diligence.
Well, this situation has also grabbed the interest of academics. Felicity Reid spoke to AUT Senior Lecturer and Assistant Professor of Marketing, Jessica Vredenburg, to get her take.
In a way, I think this is actually sort of an interesting evolution of what has previously been more of a space around kind of athlete scandals and something happening, you know, an athlete acting out. But now this sort of unearthing of past offensive tweets has become a bit of a storyline, in particular for sort of a generation of athletes that were raised with social media accounts and the way that they communicate sort of any thought that comes to mind through those social media accounts. And now we're seeing, as they sort of enter the pro sport sort of realm, that this is now becoming sort of a new iteration of sort of scandal. Seeing similar examples of other athletes that said something when they were younger, they've obviously hopefully matured since then. If it was sort of a once-off communication from 8 years ago that has been learned from, apologized for, et cetera, you could argue there might be less relevance, but these sorts of patterns, if there is a pattern, are potentially more concerning.
Robinson was allowed to continue playing, but after the match was dropped from the England team while an investigation takes place. What do you make of the way England cricket have handled it?
So I think in this instance, showing that they're taking this seriously by actually undergoing an investigation, potentially setting a bit of a precedent or an example for others, as maybe even a warning of sorts to be careful of these sorts of behaviors in the future. Research also suggests that in order to corroborate the authenticity of words, say an apology, behaviors and actions that actually cost the organization something and some sort of personal sacrifice or willingness to incur a personal cost are more of an authentic signal of this sort of remorse. So I think in this case, showing that is potentially something that has come into the mix.
What are the main lessons for other athletes moving forward from this?
Social media can really be sort of a double-edged sword. It really can be an essential brand building tool, especially for an upcoming professional athlete, but it can be precarious as well for this reason. So I think for up-and-coming athletes and those that are potentially guiding them and leading them, this and others similar to the story should be potentially a precautionary tale in terms of a bit of a teaching opportunity before they're in the public eye and spotlight in terms of how to engage on social media, but also to really understand the roots of why it's not necessarily appropriate to send those sorts of messages. And also for athletes to really, take a look at their social media history. The governing bodies, the sponsoring brands, they're also now looking more closely at these sort of social media histories and if there is anything that can potentially get the athlete and as a result them in a bit of hot water as well.
Drysdale leads from Andrei Sinek. They've been great rivals down the years, great friends as well. And Mahe Drysdale still heads for home. Sinek will pursue him all the way. What a and Olympic Games it is turning out to be for New Zealand here as Mahe Drysdale comes up to the line ahead of Andre Sinek. It's gold New Zealand, it's silver Czech Republic.
Two-time Olympic rowing champion and five-time world champion Mahe Drysdale has called time on his competitive career. The 42-year-old dominated the singles sculls for over a decade, winning gold medals at the 2012 London Olympics and the 2016 Rio Games. He had hoped his swan song would be in Tokyo, but the writing appeared on the wall when he was beaten by Tauranga's Jordan Perry at the national trials. Drysdale told sports editor Stephen Hewson, it seems his body knew time was up, and while he's been denied a fairy tale finish, he's immensely proud of what he's achieved.
I've known that I was going to retire this year, probably for about the last 5 years, but I thought I was going to retire in August last year with obviously the Tokyo Olympics supposed to be finished then. So, yeah, I guess finishing rowing was always expected. It just was, the question was kind of when. So, you know, it became pretty clear last Saturday. We had a racing series and decided after that last race that was it.
Had you sensed, though, that Saturday was going to be it, that you weren't going to get to Tokyo?
Well, I knew that that was my last opportunity to prove myself. And, you know, I knew what I had to do to get to Tokyo, and you know, I hadn't done it. And, you know, that was a pretty easy decision. And I literally, you know, crossed the line and I was like, that's my last race. So that was a good finale. And, you know, I think I'm very pleased that I saw it through, because earlier in the year, I started thinking about retirement at about Christmas with trying to come back from injury. And, you know, then at the sort of nationals and trials, I wasn't prepared to walk away then, because I still felt like there were some unanswered questions. And, you know, I felt like I answered those. I managed to overcome my injuries and get back into a very good spot. And, you know, it was a very close run thing. And, you know, it could have gone my way, but it didn't. And, you know, I was very comfortable at that moment that it was over.
Is it difficult to say I'm retiring, or has it come as a relief?
No, I don't think it was difficult saying that I'm retiring. You know, it was something I was prepared for and ready for this year. And, you know, as I say, I've pretty much lived sort of day to day, week to week, you know, knowing that it could end any point. If I got one more injury, I was done. So, you know, that was not hard, going and facing the athletes. You know, it wasn't hard. It's what I wanted to do, but emotionally, it was very, very tough. And you know, it's been such a massive part of my life. It's shaped me and who I am. You know, I'm so appreciative of everything it's given me. And you know, to see your teammates and you know, tell them that you're not going to be there every day is you know, really, really tough.
And what was the reaction that you got?
Oh, they're amazing. You know, there was a lot of tears, I think, mostly from me. But it's really just a reflective thing of, you know, you just remember back of, you know, everything you've been through together and, you know, what you've achieved as a team. And I'm very proud to be, you know, a member of, you know, New Zealand's, you know, most successful rowing team ever. You know, we've had, you know, different Olympics and world championships that we've set records and then reset records. And, you know, it's been fantastic. You know, right back to that moment in Gifu in Japan in 2005, which, you know, was my first gold medal. And, you know, we delivered four gold medals in the space of 45 minutes. So, you know, I've been involved in some of the, you know, greatest moments in the sport, and you know, it's very hard to, I guess, draw a line and say, you know, I'm only going to be there from a sideline supporting from here on in.
Can you comprehend rowing not being in your life? from here on?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty excited about it. You know, I guess I'm a very focused person. You know, I've been completely focused on Tokyo. People have asked a number of times, and sure, I've thought about it, but there's nothing yet that I've said, you know, that is my passion, that is what I'm going to do for sure. So, you know, that's really the exciting part over the next few months. I'm really looking forward to exploring some of those options. You know, I've got one of my mates is an electrician. I'd love to go and, you know, basically be an apprentice for a couple of days. Go help build a house, go milk some cows. You know, things that, you know, potentially they're not even what I see myself doing, but just to have those experiences and you know, try to get a gauge on you know, what really motivates me and, you know, what my passion is, because, you know, I absolutely love the sport, but, you know, coaching I don't think is for me. So, you know, I've got to find something that really, you know, gets me out of bed every morning.
And that was Mahe Drysdale speaking with Stephen Hewson. And that brings us to the end of Extra Time. My thanks to Zoe George and Hamish Bidwell. Extra Time is available every Friday from about 4 p.m. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Radio Public, iHeartRadio, and of course at rnz.co.nz. Give us a rating if you'd like. That helps us a whole lot and means other listeners can find us much more easily. I'm Clay Wilson. Ka kite anō.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.